Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:04 PM, the Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 21st. We had a bit of a wobble today in Bitcoin. It's a loss of consistency that adds to the two previous ones that we've had. So it's certainly worth thinking about where are we in terms of the cycle in Bitcoin? Well, one thing that we know for sure is that it's prone to volatility. If we look at simply the log scale chart, we've got plenty of examples where there have been explosive moves on the upside following lengthy periods of ranging. And even the move that we had higher in 2013 followed a really quite prolonged 6-month period of ranging. Then we had a 3-year hiatus. During the crashes, Bitcoin has tended to find support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So it did that twice in 2015, and then it did it again in 2018 and again in 2020. So I think it's reasonable to anticipate that in the event that Bitcoin is in fact peaking, that the downside potential is the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Well, that's rather a long way away, considering that the price today is at 32,000 and the 1,000-day moving average is around 8,400. So it could fall by the bones of 75% and still be in a primary uptrend. Then, of course, the next area of potential support would be the region of the previous peak. So that could be somewhere around the 13,000 level. The most bullish would be that it would be the region of the all-time previous peak, around 20,000. But then let's think about the consistency of the trend up from the lows in March. I've been quite clear in highlighting and posting the chart of the pullbacks on a number of occasions over the last few weeks that since the low in March, we've had pullbacks in the region of about 20%, and the pullback that we had from the peak to trough, from the peak in early January, was 27%, so it is a larger pullback. Then when we just zoom in and look at the range we've had over the course of this month, well, we have a sequence of lower rally highs, and until yesterday we had the sequence of higher reaction lows. So this was a triangular pattern. Generally, when you get a triangular pattern, the breakout you have from that is explosive. It could have gone either up or down, and in this case it has gone down. Now, since the low for the nadir on January 11th was above 30,000, we can anticipate that a lot of people will probably have put their stops below the 30,000 level. And then, of course, there will be people thinking about buying the dip. Where is the logical area that people would buy the dip? Probably in the region of the low from back in on January 11th. So we did have at least some evidence of dip buying coming through in bursts in here today. There was plenty of volatility between approximately 31 and 32,000 for the latter half of the session today. So then the big thing is going to be whether this $30,000 level holds. Now, there is another reason that I've been paying particular attention to Bitcoin. Well, it's I guess there are two. The first is that Ethereum tends to represent a high beta play. Sorry, that's the Ripple price. Ethereum hit a new all-time high on Tuesday, although quite briefly, and has pulled back since then. Now, if it holds the 1,200 point or a dollar level, probably not a great deal to worry about. But if it falls below 1,200, well, then it's a failed upside break, and failed upside breaks are a generally, at least, an indicator that supply and demand are coming back into balance, and they're an inconsistency, particularly for trends that have been quite consistent. And when we think about there was the fact that there was a range between about February and July, then we had the breakout and that range was above it, then we had another breakout and that range was above the last, we've had another substantial breakout, much bigger volatility, but then we've had the breakout and this one has pulled back into the upper side of that range. I think it's not terminal, but if it were to fall below 1200, well then on a closing basis, I think that would represent a rather large inconsistency. And in the event that Bitcoin pulls back below the 30,000 level, well, I think it's not beyond the bounds of possibility at all that we might see some, at least, profit taking and potentially the onset of a corrective phase for Ethereum. Then the additional reason for keeping an eye on Bitcoin is simply that it peaked in December of 2017 and Wall Street peaked in January of 2018. There was about a month between the peaks. And it's worth reminding ourselves, how was the S&P 500 performing back in 2017? 2016 had been a rather mundane year for stocks. Then after the presidential election, they did not look back. 2017 was a year where the stock market never experienced more than about a 5% pullback. And then it did pick up pace heading into the peak in early January. So Bitcoin and stocks rallied together. Obviously, Bitcoin did substantially better, and it peaked ahead of the peak in the stock market. And it was also a very liquidity-rich environment because it was right after the Trump tax cuts. So the market was pricing in the impact that that would have on company balance sheets, the repatriation of trillions of dollars from overseas, and that really helped to boost enthusiasm for the market overall. But of course, what it also did was it prompted the Fed to begin to persist with its quantitative tightening. And then, of course, that persisted all the way through the volatility in early 2018 to the peak in late 2018. So now when we think about where are we, well, the reality here is that we've had a very liquidity-rich environment in 2020. We've had a spectacular gain, where the S&P 500 has gone from about 2,200 to 3,800, and there are increasing expectations that it's right on the way to 4,000. In fact, if you look at the chart, there is absolutely nothing to really question that that isn't in fact the case. Now, the market was up in a very mild manner in here today, but we still have the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it is still grinding out new highs. I do worry, however, that the reason that the stock market is continuing to advance is because of enthusiasm about additional monetary and fiscal easing. Now, the big question is, what will the Democrat-controlled House and Senate, how successful will they be in pushing through their agenda? They have the slimmest of margins, and what it is only going to require is a very small amount of dissension in order to scupper some of the most ambitious of policies. So that's obviously something that needs to be brought into, or just at least considered. And then there is the additional point that all of this additional spending that's planned is going to require a great deal of new treasury issuance. So there's a lot of talk about issuing 50-year bonds. Now, it makes perfect sense for the US government to issue a 50-year bond, and if not a 100-year bond. And they probably would think about doing that if they thought they could get away with it. But they'll probably go for the 50-year bond first. 10-year treasury yields are about 1.1%. And the yield was a little firmer in here today. Now, the big question is, obviously, from an issuer's perspective, issuing these extraordinarily long-dated bonds at today's rates is extremely attractive. And obviously, Argentina issued a 100-year bond, and when they issued it, it was greeted with an enormous amount of enthusiasm and has since practically lost most of its value. But then we can think about Austria, which would be a AA-plus rated sovereign, and The 2017 2.1% bond, which was initially it was the first to be issued at a 100-year maturity, is currently at an asking price of 214. So it's more than double par value. It was so successful that they went on 3 years later and issued another bond, this one with only a 0.85% coupon, and that is also trading at a par value of, or an above par value of 124. So anyone who buys those bonds and holds to maturity is not almost, is definitely going to incur a significant loss. So that should help to clearly highlight to anybody that these types of long-dated bonds are incredibly interest rate sensitive. What we've also seen is that the duration of corporate bonds has also lengthened. Now, that's up to about 7 years. So we're taking on, if we think about investment grade bonds, in fact, it's up to 8.75 years. And that's from a low of about 7 back in 2019. Well, that also is positive from the perspective of issuers. Issuers are getting this incredible opportunity to take on a great deal of debt at extremely low interest rates, and they're able to stretch the maturities out to much longer durations than anyone would have been willing to lend them money in the past. The big question, of course, is whether that is any good for the lenders themselves. And the lenders are primarily pension funds and individual investors. It does create something of a rather difficult scenario, but it also helps to highlight just how interest rate sensitive the entire market is, because the pensions have loaded up on these bonds. They now have a great deal of interest rate sensitive or interest rate sensitivity built into their portfolios. When we then think about the continued strength that we're seeing on the Nasdaq, it's been resurgent over the last couple of days, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. The mega cap companies have been sitting out the advance over the course of the last 5 months, but Apple got right up to test the 140 level in here today, which was a new high. When we then think about Amazon, it's also been ranging for the last 5 months, but it is rebounding and wasn't quite able to hold the advance all the way through to the close either in here today. I still think, though, that the expectation is that the Federal Reserve is going to continue to do whatever is necessary. And the market has simply concluded that Janet Yellen is still the chair of the Federal Reserve, and that there's go or basically that there's going to be an incredibly close cooperation between the Treasury and the central bank. But the central bank is unlikely to act to increase its assistance to the market without a good reason. And that kind of good reason would be a pullback. And we just have not had a significant pullback in the stock market over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. When we then think about what's happening in the gold market, it popped on the upside yesterday. It was quiet in here today. Silver was a similar story. It was also quiet in here today, but it at least was in positive territory. Platinum continues to hold the break above 1,000, and it is it wasn't able to hold all of the advance in here today, but it continues to look like a recovery candidate. And then palladium was in negative territory. I think that there is a solid argument here that investors are going to start playing the platinum palladium pairs trade. If that's the case, then platinum has got a long way to fall relative to excuse me, palladium has a long way to fall relative to platinum, and this looks like a base formation that is primed for completion. The other thing that I think is particularly interesting right now is that an increasingly large number of shares that have really been doing not much of anything for the last 7 or 8 years are starting to break out. Incitec Pivot, for example, in Australia has clearly bounced from the region of the trend mean and pushed through that $2.50 area, which had been the low all the way back in 2013. So it's certainly looking like a failed downside break. Linus Corp has also been ranging for a really rather prolonged period and is breaking out of this long-term base formation. It was among the best performers on the ASX last year, and it is the best performer in the materials sector this year. And that is outside of the fact that we've had really quite impressive performances in some of the copper miners, for example, in here over the course of the last 9 months. OZ Minerals, for example, has accelerated higher, and it has now taken out the peak from 2011 and well on its way to extending this advance overall. I remain very much of the opinion that copper is now a secular bull market candidate, that there's a clear supply and elasticity meets rising demand market. We're really only just on the cusp of the ramp-up stage in the number of electric vehicles that will be on the road, because the vast majority of the conventional auto manufacturers, they're not really yet at the point where they're going to just have full ranges of electric or hybrid vehicles. That probably won't be until about 2023, but the market is pricing that in already. And when we think about the fact that lithium prices have clearly broken their downtrend and are starting to trend higher once more, or that even though the drive in the battery sector has been to excise cobalt from the chemistries, cobalt prices are just in the process of breaking up and out of their base formation as well. And then we have the continued bullish demand for nickel in these automotive batteries as well, and the price is also starting to push back up towards the upper side of this range that's really been forming below the peak here for the last 6 years. So there's a clear scope that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment for the industrial resources, and that we've had a significant rotation, that there are clearly now new themes evolving. That's as true in the industrial resources as it is in the agricultural commodities. Mosaic was in slightly negative territory today, but it looks increasingly likely that it is going to break this downtrend that's been in evidence now for nearly 12 years. Of course, we're starting to see that, I've seen a lot more stories about vertical farms, but vertical farms require less in the way of land, but perhaps more in the way of fertilizers, because they are clearly trying to grow the plants as quick as possible. They're mostly doing it using artificial light, so that's also one of the factors that has been pioneered by people growing cannabis, that they can shorten the harvest schedule by alternating light so that plants grow faster. In other words, they provide them more hours of daylight in the day in order to enhance photosynthesis. But what that also means is that they require more nutrients. And the market for nutrients is likely to continue to advance, particularly as we look at everything that happened in 2020, where we had everything from swarms of locusts to swine flu to huge impairment of the global supply chain because of pandemic restrictions. Then all of that is contributing to continued demand for agricultural commodities. And the vast majority of the grains and beans have now completed base formations. Now with wheat having broken higher, it's followed corn and soybeans. Now Will it hold this breakout? I think it's quite likely that it will. I haven't been talking very much recently about oil because it isn't the most bullish story of all the commodities, but it is holding this break above the $50 area. It's still really rather orderly on the upside. Of course, oil is also a major input cost for the production of just about all other commodities, and the advance remains really quite consistent. I still think, though, that there is a supply. There's plenty of supply overhead. It's really only a question of how much prices have to rise in order to bring that supply back into the market. I don't anticipate that we're back in a secular bull market for oil. I think the running will now be all in the renewables sector, and most particularly with a Biden administration in the White House. They have enacted a large number of new initiatives to support the energy sector on the renewable side, less so on the fossil fuel side. And then we also have the fact that cannabis stocks have taken off, so it's another agricultural play. Now, in the event that we do, in fact, have an end to the federal prohibition, then it's an enormous cash crop. So then what would be stopping farmers from changing out some of their production from corn, soybeans, or wheat and into cannabis? There's obviously a market there for a cash crop, and farmers are in a strong position to do that kind of thing. Well, it means that there's going to be more demand for land, and then obviously more demand for nutrients to boost these kinds of crops, and we clearly have base formation completion going on here. There's still lots of demand for promising technologies, and then we continue to see that demand for 3D printers continues to pop on the upside here. So there's plenty of evidence of demand. There's a lot of enthusiasm for different themes that are going on right now, and it's all predicated on continued supply of liquidity. And I do continue to think that if Bitcoin does roll over, it's an indication that supply may start of new liquidity may be waning. It's a lightning rod for speculative flows, so therefore it is likely to show weakness before other asset classes. And therefore it is something that we should be monitoring, because if it sustains a move below 30,000 and further extends the decline, then it's a medium-term peak, and therefore we may see some unwinding of short-term overbought conditions on other assets as well. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.